My name's Dan Garrison. Live in Berwick, Pennsylvania. Was drafted in 1969. Stayed in 34 years. Was going to get out when I was in 30 years in, and then 9/11 happened. And we knew there would be some action on that. And I think everybody in America was mad. And if you could, you did something. Well, I could, so I stayed in. And on my 2 weeks after my 50th birthday, I jumped 2 miles out at 2 o'clock in the morning at 10,000 feet with 375 young men. And we took the Baghdad Airport. Nobody was there. They saw us coming out of the sky, left their jeeps, left their trucks, left their pickups, left their cars, left their guns, left their ammo, left food, clothing. They saw us, they just ran. And the one colonel walked over to me as we were walking in and he said, "Where's your rifle?" "So what do I need a rifle for? These people aren't going to be here. They see us coming out of a C-5. The C-5 goes by you for 5 minutes, 285 foot long. They knew they didn't have a prayer. And we took the Baghdad Airport with absolutely not a shot fired. I used to take my boys on hunts throughout the world. Hunts and hikes. Just seeing strange places that they'd never see in their life. And we went on a hunt in Greenland, and the boys and I went with one particular guide, and it took us a day and a half by horses and by canoes to get to where this guide wanted to hunt. And he said that the biggest moose anybody had ever seen up there for years had been seen by a bush pilot, and we were going out there to basically where it was seen. And when it finally did show itself, it certainly was something I had never saw. 2,200 pounds, we figured. It was just unbelievably huge. I mean, with his head standing up, you know, he could reach like 14, 15 feet up on a tree to eat. It was unbelievable. And I was just about to kill it, and something entered my mind. I looked at the guide and I said, "What are we going to do with this? We brought horses and 10-foot wood canoes out here." "Oh," I said, "we'll just take the head, cape it, take the tenderloins." And I said, "Leave 1,800 pounds of meat." I said, "Don't you have other Indians like yourself? Don't they need fed?" "Yeah, they can't come out here and handle all this meat. The worms, the wolves, the bears, they got to eat." And then they wouldn't talk to me the rest of the 3 days we were there because they were all very angry that I did not shoot the moose. I took my grandson with me down in Northumberland County, and he was maybe 10 years old at the time. And I had to look at a home owned by a Vietnamese fellow who had came here. He was about my age, but he was one of the lucky ones that got out in 75 of the country. And we were talking, standing in the kitchen, and I dropped my pencil. And when I reached down to get my pencil, my sleeve came up and showed my airborne tattoo. The only tattoo I have. I only got it because I was forced into it by a bunch of guys that I went to jump school with. But anyway, he said, "Oh, you Army?" And I said, "I'm in the Army." No, I was in the Army. He said, "Vietnam?" I said, yeah, I was over there about a year and a half. And he said, "Spearhead." And I said, "What do you know about Spearhead?" He goes, "Me paratrooper. Spearhead." Well, Spearhead was a late 72 mission by the United States that never happened. And we were trying to stop, the United States was trying to stop the Cambodians and North Vietnamese from supplying their troops. So about 600 of us jumped into Cambodia. However, everything was leaked out, so about 350 Cambodian and North Korean troops jumped out, and everybody's firing at everybody, and almost nobody's getting hit because it's 2 o'clock in the morning. And we, you know, there we are in front of my grandson talking about we probably shot at each other. And here we are in America living the life. I thought that, I don't know, just an interesting clash in, you know.
That's just funny.
Just life itself, you know. And life itself is just, it really is. If you just, it's one ball of fun. Mm-hmm. And there's bad times, and there's good times. But if you keep the right attitude, you're just going to have a heck of a lot of fun. I really think that.
So you were just telling me a few minutes ago that you're, I think you said, in the process of getting a degree in philosophy?
Yeah, yeah.
So how old are you right now?
I just turned 64.
64. And you're already in school for that course?
It's a online course.
Okay.
Out of Bucknell. Mm-hmm. And I have to go over there normally maybe once a week, once every other week. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's kind of interesting taking a class in philosophy because, like taking a class in economics, none of these professors have had their own business.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not preaching to the same choir. None of them have ever actually done, most of them have never actually done anything but taken out of book context and make you learn it. And it's the same way in a philosophy class. Donovan, our teacher, now we get, him and I get into arguments over in class and online. And, you know, like I tell him, you ever been there? You ever been to China? You ever been to India? You ever been to Vietnam? You ever been to Japan? You ever been in the Philippines? Who the heck are you to tell me about Eastern philosophy? You can teach it, and you pretend you know something about it, but until you eat with those people, until you drink with those people, and until you're laughing with those people, crying with those people, that you get to understand the differences between the two of you.
So, at 64 years old, 34 years in the military, and you've been all around the world, and now you're studying this philosophy. What's something that you've learned that connects humanity? I mean, like you were just saying, like, you can learn the differences when you've spent time with those people and been to those places to see the differences.
I think the big thing that you learn, if you're paying attention and if you have an open mind, is that everyone on earth, no matter what their philosophy, no matter what their color, no matter what their religion, no matter what their tribe, want certain things. They want life to be better for the children. They want their family to be safe. They want to be safe. They want to keep going up in the world. Even a little Vietnamese guy with a small rice paddy, he's hoping to have 2 rice paddies. We all want the same doggone thing. What are we fighting about? Now, you know, and now you can contrast that with with you know, Genghis Khan, Tamerlane, Hitler, Mussolini, Pol Pot, Ho Chi Minh. I mean, go for it, you know, pick a name, pick a bad guy. And I think it's all money. I think everything's about money in the entire world. I really do. I think everything is about money. And money, I mean, you can transfer that into land. You can transfer that into territory. You can transfer that into any form of something that somebody would want in the world. But when it all comes down to it, it's all about something that has something to do with money. And, you know, I occasionally over the years I've gone to religious get-togethers and stuff with my wife. I don't really get that much into that stuff. And people say, well, how do you kill people for 34 years? Well, first of all, I didn't. I mean, I was a soldier, and I did what I had to do, and I don't talk about it. But then I don't sit around feeling sorry for myself, because I personally thought what I did was what I had to do. And I can live with that. And I can stand before the man when I stop breathing, and I can say, I did what I thought I could do. I did what I thought was right, and if I was wrong, say to me, whatever. But you gotta wonder. One of my favorite stories is a short story by Mark Twain in what they call Twain Black. But he wrote a short story called The Stranger. And my aunt, who was a school teacher, made me read crazy things when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. I read the Bible twice. I wrote War and Peace when I was 14. She just wouldn't let it go. But
I think I read that book right around the same age as well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting book. In this short story, and it's only about 3 pages long, called The Stranger, it never says where it takes place. It never says what war, but a preacher is in his church preaching to the people, and the doors fly open, and then walks this black hooded figure, and he walks down the aisle, and everybody is quiet, and the preacher doesn't know what's going on. And this thing walks behind him and folds its arm and stands there. Finally, the preacher looks around at him and says, what do you need? And the shadow pointed at the chair behind the pew, behind where he was standing. So the preacher sat down, and the stranger walks up to the podium and begins a prayer to bring our soldiers home safe, to make them glorious in their battle for a win in the name of God. And there's, you know, I've been years since I read it, but he says other things, and then he just walks out of the church. Well, what you take from this is everybody thinks God's on their side. The Germans thought God was on their side. The Huns thought God was on their side. The Moors thought God was on their side. The South and the North thought God was on their side. Does God pick sides? That would kind of disappoint me.
Could you maybe just give me a couple like bullet points, like highlights about your life? You know, major milestones, like, I don't know, whatever comes to your mind. Just a few things that I could kind of jot down as.
I was born in Sayre, Pennsylvania, at Robert Packard Hospital. I have no idea to who.
You didn't know your parents?
No. I was adopted by my father, Don, and my mother, Betty Garrison, when I was like 18 months old, through the welfare system.
What year were you born?
50.
1950?
And I never really cared. You know, it was always something spoke openly around the house that I was adopted. It was always spoke openly, but there was never any, I was treated like a son. You know, I mean, and I think because I had quite a mom and dad, uncles, aunts, grandparents, I never went, you know, searching for my parents or my mother. I never, you know, in the back of your mind now and then it's, you know, where'd I come from, what happened. Milestones in my life, I don't know. I met my wife in seventh grade. Isn't that crazy?
You met your wife in seventh grade?
Yeah. we kind of dated on and off and till I think our senior year. Our senior year, we got kind of more serious about the marriage, whole marriage thing. And then we went off to college, and I went over to Williamsport to Lycoming College. Mm-hmm. And I managed to fit in about a semester and a half. Wasn't really doing that well. And Uncle Sam decided there was other things for me to do. So I was drafted, graduated in 68. Drafted just before 70 in that summer.
You mentioned earlier that, I think you said your son put together a display.
My grandson.
Your grandson put together
a display. Yeah, my grandson. I mean, I have...
So what was on that display of your military record?
I have several uniforms, Class A and a Class A formal. And on it are all the ribbons and whatnot that you see on TV. But my grandson had somehow found a bunch of stuff I had laying around and put this 4x4 poster up, and he looked up in the military guides how you put the different badges, or what most people would call medals, and you know how do you put them, because they go on in a certain in a certain way. And when he was all done, and he gave it to me for Father's Day last year, and one of the first things he said after I thanked him, I said, geez, this will look good in my office. And he goes, Pat, you got 14 battle ribbons. And I go, yeah. He goes, that means you were in 14 wars. And I said, no, you got to understand that a battle ribbon isn't necessarily a war. I mean, I have the Vietnam battle ribbon. I have the Falklands battle ribbon. And I could go on. But a lot of them were operations in South America during Reagan and the anti-drug wars. And they were not in the paper, but everybody got a ribbon for going there. The Philippines, we spent quite a bit of time in the Philippines with the commies. Commies. Don't think I'd ever hear myself say that again. So I don't know. I mean, what monumental things that I've had. Wounded 4 or 5 times. I don't know. I had half a dozen Purple Hearts, but most of them are like stupid, you know. Love this. 1985. I was a sergeant major. I retired as a command sergeant major. And I slammed the hood of a staff car on my thumb and smashed my thumb in what was considered a war zone. And like 3 weeks later, I walk into the officers. Well, it was just everybody ate and drank there. It was just an officers club. But I walk in and Colonel White goes, "Hey, come over here, Garrison. We're going to buy you a round. Sit down." And he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out this Purple Heart and he puts it down. And it's got orders on it and giving me my, I don't know, third or fourth Purple Heart, whatever. And I said, "What the hell is this for?" He goes, "Well, look, you smashed your thumb." And I thought, whatever. Smashed my thumb in a war zone. Well, he about shot me. Oh, yeah. There's been some good times. And there's been, I just don't religiously get into it.
Mm-hmm.
But things happen that you just got to wonder about.
Mm-hmm.
I was walking across the compound in Fubai, 2 o'clock in the morning, sneaking over a buddy of mine's hooch. We're going to drink some whiskey. And all of a sudden, pouring down rain. And all of a sudden, I was on my butt. What in the heck hit me? I got up. My chest was sore, and I thought, what the heck? So I go over to Jim's hooch and went in and hit some beer, and we were doing shots of whiskey. And I went to, I mean, you got to remember now, when it's 75 degrees, you got a field jacket on because you're used to 120 degrees. So it's cold when it's raining at 75. So I went to take my coat off because I was inside, and I could only pull my zipper down to about between my chest. So I pulled it over my head, and Jim says, "You're bleeding." And I look down and I see blood all over. And I unbuttoned my shirt and there was a button missing. And there was blood all over my t-shirt. And he said, "You better go over to the dispensary." So, of course, I'm not open at 2 o'clock in the morning, so I went over to the hooch, got the corpsman. He took me over, you know. He says, "What the hell's this?" I said, "I don't know." And he laid me down and turned on the light, and he's looking, and he goes, "Does that hurt?" And I go, "Yeah, it hurts." And he's got a, not a scissors, but like forceps or something, and he's sticking it down inside right here. Feel it.
Okay.
And he pulls out a half a button. Well, would you believe, must have been a sniper shot, went through my zipper on my jacket, hit my button, split it in half, and drove it into my skin. So they fixed that up, you know. All I did was wash it off 3 times a day. But that night when I got back over and I said to Jim, I said, that's enough, I'm going to bed. And when he went to give me my jacket back, we heard his thump on the ground. And the bullet had gone from here and was laying in the cuff of the jacket.
Get out.
What's the possibility of that?
Oh, my word.
What's the possibility of that? You know?
That's incredible.
I didn't get a Purple Heart for it. I didn't tell anybody about it. The next day, the corpsman said, "You want me to tell the old man about it?" And I said, "Nah." I said, "He'll just take me off duty for a few days. I don't need that crap. Sit around with nothing to do. It's bad enough to sit around with nothing to do until something bad happens." So it's always something bad you're waiting to happen. You don't sit around waiting for something good to happen.
So a sniper nailed you in the chest, yeah. And it didn't kill you.
No. Didn't even.
And you didn't even know.
It broke my sternum, and it broke the skin and shoved the
half a button.
Half a button underneath it. So I still have this big hole right there. You just stuck your finger in it. But what's the chances of that? An AK-47 bullet. I mean, that'd go through 10 men. Military ball, you line 10 men up, shoot right smack for the belly, that'd go through 10 men. Didn't go through me. All my boys used to call me the Cowboy Superman.
With an experience like that, and now studying philosophy and meaning of life stuff, what do you do with a story like that?
Oh, you tell it and you laugh. You know, there's stories that aren't funny, and you don't laugh. But I would imagine everybody has things that you just don't want to talk about. I mean, you don't have to spend 30 years in the Army to have it. Mm-hmm. You can just live a normal life doing almost anything and have things privately that maybe you secretly think, boy, did I have to do that? Or did I have to say that to him? Or, you know, like, for instance, I kept a cabin cruising for quite a few years up at Seneca Lake. And when I got rid of it, I pretty much let it go for nothing, for a lot of reasons. But anyway, there was a cocky little SOB who had a third-generation train franchise. You know what train is? Air conditioning.
Oh, yeah.
Heating. And he lost it the year before. Went bankrupt. Belly out. Three generations and he went bankrupt. Train dumped him as a franchise. Well, anyway, we're sitting around the fire and he kept asking me all night how much I sold my boat for. And I know what he was trying to do. He was trying to embarrass me because of how cheaply I got rid of the boat and what I paid for it and what I put in it. And my wife and I got back to the boat that night and she goes, I was waiting for you to make some comment about, you wonder how he has a $30,000 boat when he's broke and they're after him for mortgage on his house that he just built after he went bankrupt. And I said, you know, it just doesn't seem that important anymore. So I think, yeah, the philosophy of life is the older you get, the more it doesn't matter. Is that right? Should it matter more? But, you know, 5-10 years ago, I would have really embarrassed him. I'd walk away. I'd have made him feel about this big in front of everybody. And everybody knew, you know, being bankrupt and everything, but it just didn't seem. And in my military career, when I was younger, I was full of piss and vinegar. You didn't want to fool around with 156 pounds of me, because you were not going to win. Because I was going home. Nothing mattered. I was going home. You weren't. I was. Well, my men. Always my men. But I think maybe the older you get, the more your philosophy tends to lead you into, does any of it mean anything? And if it doesn't matter, then what are we fighting for? I don't know.
Can I just ask you one more question? And then I'll let you get going. But that just kind of makes me think of a quote from Albert Einstein, who said, there's basically two ways to live. One that, I'm paraphrasing here, he said, one that nothing is a miracle, or two that everything is a miracle.
Yes, I've heard that quote.
What do you think about that?
Well, I can tell you I've seen miracles. Good ones. I see miracles. I've seen men who should not have walked away, get up and walk away without a scratch. It's happened to me several times. I've never had, the year I retired, my wife had found out she had breast cancer. And I think, you know, it was strange. All those years of being in places where they were shooting at me, and almost nothing bothered me as bad as what if she died. I mean, all the places I've been, all the people I saw, all the death I've seen, all the destruction I've seen. And I was more concerned about her than I was about anything in life. And we're just getting to know each other. You know, the past 12 years. I mean, you spend 34 years away from each other. You know, she's not the same person. I'm not the same person. Nobody is. You're young. Are you the same person are you two the same person that got married?
We've been having this conversation recently.
Yeah. And you know, you can call it getting worse. But in our case, we always joked about it just being another change. And you can go with it. And, you know, there's things I've got into that my wife just absolutely hated. And it's just walked away from me and said, do what you want. And many, same thing with her, you know, got into things. And I said, oh, I'm not doing that. But we all grow at different levels. We all grow at different spiritual levels, philosophic levels, personal levels, health levels. Health seemed to be the big thing as you get into your 60s. Health is a big thing, and I can't stress it enough to people. I paid absolutely no idea, no, not one bit to my health for 40 years. Smoked 2 packs of cigarettes a day, ate anything I want, drank like a fish, did anything I want. Well, you know, when I was about 58, things started to, you know. So I quit smoking back in the, I guess, I think I was 55 when I quit smoking. But I know that's going to come back to haunt me if I live long enough. Type 2 diabetes. They say I've had a heart attack. I know nothing about it, but when they did CAT scan, the guy showed me that scar in the back of my heart. So they contribute that, and who knows? They contribute that to Agent Orange. I don't know. I was over in the Gulf, and I spent most of my time in Kuwait, not in battle. At the time, I was in S4 supply, so I was making sure things were going and things were coming. So I really wasn't. I got a battle ribbon with it, got a battle star, all that kind of crap. But I was stationed in Kuwait. They're lovely people, but they told me I had type 2 diabetes, and they just, you know, did all this testing, and supposedly it all came from Agent Orange. Who knows? I mean, you know, Christ, I drank a bottle of whiskey a day for years when I was away from home, you know, and there was nothing to do. And there's always a lot of nothing to do in the Army. But you pay for what you do. And, you know, I kind of preach that now, but you know, most times you're preaching to the choir.
So maybe just to kind of wrap this up here, what do you want to do with however many years you still have left? We've talked a lot about, you know, the last 60 years.
Mainly.
What's the future hold for you?
I like what I do, so I'm going to continue doing this. I meet lots of very, very interesting people. Extremely interesting people.
Can you just say what it is that you do now?
Oh, I'm an independent contractor. Insurance companies and banks send me jobs to go look at the houses and what the conditions are. Or in this case, has there been any change in your business in 3 years? You know, do you have 5 employees and have a whole, you know, setup now?
Mm-hmm.
And I look at farms, you know, So that's basically what I do.
Mm-hmm. So you enjoyed that work?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it. I'm almost on the road, mm-hmm. you know, which is a good thing because my wife and I, we didn't spend a lot of time together. So we can't take a lot of each other. We love each other. I mean, we're together and we're civil and, you know, we have a relationship, I think, better than a lot. But she goes her way, I go mine, and when we meet up, we meet up. But I think I've spent a lot of time with my grandchildren. I'm spending a lot of time with my great-grandchildren. And hopefully, maybe, some of the things that the old man says that they think is off the wall and crazy, someday in their lifetime will hit them as, I grew up around, I'm the oldest son, the oldest grandson, the oldest nephews. So I grew up with a lot of people that were born in the 1880s, 1890s. And most of the men were John Wayne, Clint Eastwood types, you know, one-liners, bitch about a Monday. And my grandfather would say, you know, I found out years ago, on a Monday, you can take care of all the things that you messed up last week. So when I wake up Monday, I'm happy as the devil that I can fix that. And an uncle that would come out with stuff like, every man has to know something about everything, everything about something. In other words, you have to be well-read, but you better know something to make your money, make your mark. I tell that sort of stuff to the grandchildren. And I probably did the same thing to Willard and my grandfather. You know, what's that old man talking about, you know? But later on as you get older, you realize they made sense. And anything that just simply commonly overall makes sense is a good thing. And if you can spread that, that's a good thing. And I don't moan and groan about bad places I was and times I couldn't take a bath for 3-4 weeks at a time, couldn't brush my teeth for the same. I mean, I'm a nut, in and out of the shower twice a day, when I'm home or when I could. But it was just absolutely nothing worse than not being able to bathe or brush your teeth. Not to mention eating cold MREs. K rations from World War II and Vietnam were a treat compared to these MREs. Honest to God, you'd open a can, and after you were done with it, and you looked on the bottom, and it said 1934. But it was great food. And these MREs are horrible. They really are. But, I mean, you can spend your life spreading misery. You can spend your life just having a good time and generally telling people, well, don't worry about it. It'll get better. And another thing. Uncle Willard, born in 1886. On his 21st birthday, his father bought him a Winchester 1886 in 5570. And I've killed almost 180 deer with it. But one of the things he said one day, and I can't remember what the contents were or what we were talking about. I couldn't hit a thing with it when he first gave it to me. And he got up and as he walked away, he said, you never stop trying. You never give up. And he got in his car and went home and came back about an hour later, and I was putting 5-inch groups at 200 yards with it. Don't ever give up, no matter how bad it gets. And if you're an American, you best get down and kiss the ground every night before you go to bed. Because in a lot of places in the world, if your crops don't come up this year, you have to decide which child not to feed. There's people out there coming at you. There's nobody out down that road. Go to Syria. People don't know what they have here. in 9/11. All these Americans were all upset, all bent out of shape, got to do something about it. Yeah, even the left-wing tree huggers were, yeah, we got to get him back, we got to get him back, we got to get him back. What happened 3 years later? Ah, we got to get out of there. This is a fight to the finish. This may be the proverbial fight.
I think that's a great way to wrap up right there. Never give up. I like that.
Never give up.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
All right. I better
be Sergeant up. Garrison.
No, just Dan. And stop being Sergeant.